Experts help us boost our personal finance IQ in the new year. Today is the first day of tax filing season. Tis the season to gather up documents and forms. Perhaps it's the one time each year you take a broad look at your financial situation and perhaps make a few positive changes. Maybe save a little more money, pay off a long-standing bill, improve your credit score, rebalance your investment portfolio, or create a household budget. Does this sound like you? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we offer some expert help from a team that includes a wealth advisor, a CPA, and a consumer credit advocate. What are your questions about improving your personal finances in the new year? Are you thinking about a new kind of investment but aren't sure if it's a good idea? Are you wondering which bill is best to pay off first? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. When it comes to managing money, it's a complicated world out there. We could all probably use some help prioritizing what to do with our income. Some people are turning now to robo-advisors and automating their personal finances. You can now put your savings, bills, and other financial actions on autopilot, but is that a good idea? Today, we're going to learn about this and other ways to take control of your money and start the new year on the right financial footing. With me in the studio, Allison Bishop. She's an accountant and financial coach. Jennifer Wilson is co-founder, president, and chief investment officer of DeAnn Wealth Advisors. And David Lynch is principal consumer credit examiner with the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you need advice how to put away more savings for the future or how to invest wisely? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Jennifer, did I pronounce the name of your...
Pretty darn close. DeAnn.
DeAnn. Okay, great. Thanks so much. So, Allison, I'm going to start with you because today is officially the first day of tax filing season, I understand. What are some tips you offer people today as they think about filing?
Well, I would definitely say to actually file as soon as you possibly can, as soon as you get all the documents that you need, because in the last few years, there's just been an explosion of fraud and fraudulently filed returns. And if somebody else files a return under your name and social security number before you get to file yours, it just creates a huge headache for you. I've talked to a lot of people who have gone through that and they don't ever want to do it again. So
now I know that it's human nature if you're going to receive a refund to want to file it right away. But if you're going to owe in taxes to want to wait, you recommend even folks who are going to owe to file right away.
Right, because filing and paying are two different things. So even if you file a couple months early, you still don't owe that tax till April 15th.
All right. Good tip to start off with today. Jennifer, do you find that this time of year is a time when people come to you and sort of take a holistic look at their investments and say, okay, I'm going to rebalance or recommit to something now that it's the new year and now that my tax forms are in front of me and I'm seeing the big numbers?
They certainly do. They stop in and, you know, now is the time to be looking at the balance in your assets and determining if you have the appropriate risk scenario for your own individual needs and certainly perhaps rebalancing those assets or just perhaps looking at other types of investments to make sure that they meet your individual needs.
Okay. And would you recommend people do that every year, every 5 years? What's sort of a healthy but not too, overwhelming timetable?
Yeah, generally speaking, once a year is a good time to look at your asset mix and see if it still is in line with your particular risk tolerance and your time horizon. Once or twice a year is generally plenty of time, more than enough to do your asset rebalancing.
Yeah. All right, David, we're talking about people doing asset rebalancing, but there are a lot of people out there who don't have assets to rebalance. And I know a big commitment, a big passion of yours is trying to help people to move from living paycheck to paycheck to actually being the kind of person who's making a decision about your retirement investment. What kind of basic tips can you give someone if they're listening to this program today and thinking, I can't think about that stuff. I just got to make it till next week.
Well, I think one of the New Year's resolutions that the State of Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection had was to come out with a book called On the Money, A Young Person's Guide to Personal Finance. And your question is, the answers are in that book. We talk about personal budgeting and setting aside 10% or 15% or 5%, just getting in the habit of saving and investing. So, you know, someone like Jennifer can have business with her investment type of companies. It's really a lifestyle. And, you know, and it's not just what you make. We all make a salary of some kind, but it's how you spend the money, whether it's, you know, how you use your credit cards, what kind of vehicle you purchase, your housing situation, just being careful, being situationally aware economically.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions for our experts, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Allison, we started the program with you recommending that people do their taxes as soon as possible. I have another question about taxes. What are the mistakes you see over and over again?
Well, fortunately, these days most people are e-filing and, you know, using tax software. So you're eliminating a lot of the math mistakes, and software is designed to identify things that you might not realize, that, you know, credits or deductions you might not realize that are applicable to you. But I would say for those people doing their own taxes, you need to make sure certain basic things are correct, like your Social Security number needs to be correct. And the Social Security numbers of everybody on your return. And then if you're getting your refund direct deposited into your bank account, make sure that your routing number is correct and that your bank account number is correct, because if it goes into someone else's return, I'm not sure you're ever going to see that money.
And have you seen that?
I have not seen that, but
oh, good.
I don't ever want to see that. So,
okay, Jen, I want to ask you about something I mentioned at the top of the program. What are robo-advisors?
Well, robo-advisors are basically an online software that uses really complicated algorithms to kind of determine how to administer your portfolio. Most of the major brokerages out there now are having some kind of robo-advisor offering. And really the idea behind it is to give that advice at a much lower cost than you might typically pay at a full boutique type of advisor. And depending on the particular person's needs, if they're not really complicated, for instance, it might be a better low-cost solution for them. And certainly if, you know, they don't have very specific needs that they need to talk to a financial professional face-to-face about, then, you know, certainly somebody with more tech-savvy angle would go in there and be able to answer a number of questions, and the robo-advisor sets up a portfolio for them. And then there are options for different types of the robo-advisors that would either enable them to rebalance their portfolio automatically, might even offer some level of tax loss harvesting. So there are a lot of different robo-advisors out there now. Some are with the big firms like Fidelity and Vanguard and Schwab. And then there are some independent firms such as Betterment that offer these types of packages.
It sounds a little, you know, there's so much conversation right now about cybersecurity and risk. It seems risky to put everything, your entire investment, your entire future into some sort of robo account. Is that just sort of a gut reaction I'm having? Is it actually pretty safe and secure to do so?
Well, certainly you want to make sure that the appropriate security is in place with the firm itself. And as I said, most of the top brokerage firms, Schwab and Fidelity and Vanguard, for instance, have multiple levels of security authentication and so on. And as far as the portfolio itself, it's the idea is to provide a diversified portfolio, so you're not putting all of your eggs in one basket. And it's really trying to get people into the mode of investing that way, rather than throwing it all into one particular thing and then, you know, like the basket of eggs kind of drops and we all have scrambled eggs. You know, so the it it has a lot of advantages. They're generally lower cost. They usually use ETFs or exchange-traded funds within the portfolio that they build for you. And so some of them also give you access to an actual human person, a human advisor, for a premium charge. So they all have different costs. Some of them have account minimums, things like that. And I'm sure if you get online and look up RoboAdvisor, you can probably find a chart that shows you here's what all the minimums are, here's what the fees are, and so on and so forth, and pick an option that works for you.
Because fees are really important. This is something that we've really become much more aware of in just the last few years. And when I say we, I mean those of us who have IRAs and 401ks, not people in the financial world, that really to keep a close eye on the fees on the investments that you have.
Exactly. They make a huge impact on the returns that you see. So you want to make sure that you're finding something that has reasonable costs. And certainly ETFs are very low cost. Mutual funds can be very low cost. And advisors charge for their services, which, you know, they need to do that. But there are things out there for people with a smaller level of investment. Again, some of these have minimum investment, initial investment minimums that you'd need to look at. And the questions hopefully get at some of what drives your risk tolerance. In other words, your ability and your willingness to tolerate risk. And that's really important too. You don't want somebody that is in 2 years from retirement to be plopping all of their hard-earned investments into a very high-risk investment.
I'm going to go to the calls and emails in just a second, but first I'm going to put you each on the spot for one tip. David, if you could give our listeners one tip to how to be more financially healthy this year, what would the one thing be?
Start with a budget. Don't just take your paycheck and try to run through it. Establish a budget on what you're taking and then how much you want to set aside. Pay yourself first and then always have something left over for a deposit or an investment.
All right. Allison.
I was going to say something along the lines of pay yourself first. Automate your savings. Figure out how much you want to be going to your savings and set that up, if you can, out of your paycheck. If you can't, set it up, maybe an automatic transfer every month from your bank account to your savings account, something like that. But that's how you're going to be the most successful, is if you're not having to touch it every month to make it happen.
Direct deposit or automatic transfer. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jennifer?
I'd reiterate what Allison says and have that come directly out of your paycheck. Save for retirement. Do it regularly and stick with a discipline. Don't jump in and out of the market because you think this is going to affect it or that's going to affect it. But definitely take advantage of employer matching and really maximize those retirement savings to the extent that you can.
Okay, so we have a post from a Jennifer on Facebook. Other than referrals or positive word of mouth, what should one look for in a financial advisor? Good question. You're ready to make the jump. How do you choose?
Well, I'd certainly look at the qualifications for the advisor, and there are certain acronyms that we can get into: certified financial planner, chartered financial analyst. Those are the types of things that mean that this advisor has a lot of education and experience in the field. So that would be something to look for sure.
All right. And David, does your office offer any guidance, any red flags on people to stay away from or how to look for an investment advisor?
I want to give a big plug to my friend Judy Shaw, who's the administrator for the Maine Office of Securities. And I want to give their toll-free number, which is 1-877-624-8551. That's 1-877-624-8551. That's the Maine Office of Securities. It's a Maine state government agency that licenses broker-dealers, and the securities they offer. So that's a toll-free call. If you want to find out if somebody is licensed or registered, give them a call. That's my best advice.
All right. So we're going to go to Jessica, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is about filing my taxes in April and what your opinion is about tax attorneys. And what your opinion is about filing extensions. I'm almost 70, and just before the economy crashed, I began an 8-year horrible adversarial divorce, and at the end of it, I decided I was going to have to withdraw money from my retirement annuity. So I did that at age 66, and that was during last year, but I did not put in sufficient withholding, so my tax bill, apparently, it's a huge amount of money, is going to be over $50,000, and I don't have it. So I considered selling my house, which I would come out with probably not enough to buy a house, so I'm not quite sure what steps to take.
Well, I don't know that you need a tax attorney. I think if you have just a tax preparer, like a CPA or somebody who prepares taxes, definitely go to them first. And if you don't have one of those people, it sounds like in your situation, it's complicated enough that it's definitely a worthwhile investment to consult with them and find out what they recommend and then what your options are. You can do payment plans with the IRS, but if I were you, I would definitely talk to a professional and kind of so that they have all the details and then they can give you the best advice.
How would she go about finding someone if she hasn't used someone before?
Oh, that's a good question. If it were me, I would probably go by word of mouth. Ask around and who your friends are using, how responsive they are, if you feel like they're professional, and just if they have happy clients, then they're probably doing a good job.
All right. Good luck to you, Jessica. We're going to go to Camden and Dominic. Hi, Dominic. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So my wife and I are small business owners, and we're kind of new to it all. So we want to invest in our IRA, but yet at the same time, we're not sure how much taxes are going to be taken out of it. So I'm almost wondering, is it worth waiting until my accountant's gotten everything ready before I invest in my IRA, or should I just go for it?
I think you could probably wait. I mean, you can invest in your IRA until April 15th. And so I think if you're uncertain, I think it's fine to wait and find out what your tax bill is going to be and how much you can afford to invest. There's no downside to that.
Would you recommend that he maybe automatically deduct the money that he would be thinking about putting into the IRA into maybe just some sort of simple savings account in the bank just to have it set aside and then make the decision after the next new year?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. You can, if you know how much money you have, put it to the side, and then however much you have to give the government, give it to them, and then the rest, you already have it set aside for savings.
Dominic, thanks and good luck with your business. We do have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation on personal finances, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dirigo Pines in Orono, offering a spectrum of retirement living options on a 68-acre wooded campus. DirigoPines.com. And Lighting Concepts, now open in Portland and Lewiston, dedicated to lighting Maine homes with style and function.
Indivisible, Public Radio's national conversation about America in a time of change. Tune in to listen and call in to participate live 4 nights a week. We'll have 4 hosts, and we'll do this for the first 100 days of the new presidency. It's brand new, and it starts January 23rd. There's a seat at this table for everyone. Indivisible.
Maine Public Radio will give it a try this week, Monday through Thursday evenings at 8.
On the next Fresh Air, how the CIA became militarized. We talk with Joshua Kurlansik, author of the new book, A Great Place to Have a War, about the CIA's clandestine operations in the small Southeast Asian country Laos in the 60s and 70s. More recently, the CIA has been carrying out drone strikes. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Dia? Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Managing Your Money Wisely. With me in the studio, Jennifer Wilson, co-founder and president of Dion Wealth Advisor, David Lynch, principal consumer credit examiner with the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection. Did I just call you David Lynch again?
You did, but you're great.
David Lynch. I'm,
my mother's listening and she's saying, that other Lynch is on there again. So.
David Leach, our friend David Leach, is principal consumer credit examiner with the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection. And Allison Bishop is an accountant and a financial coach. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. David Leach or Lynch, whoever you are, I think you'll like this email. This is from Steve. Please let listeners know that they should avoid debt settlement organization, any debt settlement organization that is not approved by the state of Maine. Approved list is available at the state of Maine website. You have discussed this previously. Let people note that debt settlement companies that purport to be a law firm or associated with a law firm are especially suspect. Unless they are speaking personally to a Maine licensed attorney, it is highly likely a scam designed to get around the Maine law and FTC regulations. The best choice for debt settlement is through a nonprofit such as CCCS.
Right. And CCCS is the one, you remember the catchy jingle, and I can't sing, so I won't.
Oh, come on, do.
CCCS. And that was Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Maine, which is right down here. But now they're known as Money Management International. My best advice is, and I think people in this demographic that are using debt settlement services, they're in big trouble. And they owe a lot of debt. It could be credit card debt. It could be because of a divorce or whatever. And it's a simple phone call. It's to the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection, 1-800-332-8529. And we will tell you if this entity has a license. People that are the most vulnerable, Jennifer, are people in the situation. They get on the internet 2 o'clock in the morning. Next thing they know, they're looking at the bottom of their check. They're reading from left to right the routing and transit number, the bank account number. Oh, yeah. And we get a phone call. Well, I've been sending $300 for the last 6 months, $1,800. And all my credit cards, none of them are showing any balance. I never heard from this company out of Florida or Nevada or Eastern Europe. And so, unfortunately, we as a consumer protection agency of the Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection say, hey, go easy, give us a call, find out. Our website has postings, and we're here to help. So it's a problem, and a lot of the times they don't actually take the money from the bank account. They'll say, well, go down to Western Union or send a MoneyGram or whatever. And once that money is wired, it is G-O-N-E gone. Mm. So, you know, go easy, be careful, and, you know, like a Maine lawyer before that submitted to practice before the Maine bar is a good choice.
Okay. An email from Liz. My partner and I have been together for a while now but are unmarried. We recently bought a house and had a baby. We'll file separately this year, but are considering marrying. Is there a benefit for us to stay legally single or to be married tax-wise? You're smiling, Allison. You've gotten this question several hundred times, haven't you?
Yeah, and obviously it depends on the individual situation. Often filing married jointly is probably going to be a better situation, but it certainly depends on in their particular situation, you know, how much income each of them is making. If one has, you know, let's say high medical expenses or something, there's obviously a lot of things that go into that.
Okay. John in Freeport, go ahead. Oh, there we go. John in Freeport, go ahead.
Yes. My question is, or I guess I'll give you a little history. I had some dealings a number of years ago with someone who was kind of unscrupulous and had lost some monies. But since then, whenever I've used a financial advisor or a person, I have made sure that I believe the term is that they are a fiduciary, where they are by law legally obligated to make sure your interests come first before them. Before theirs, is there any discussion on that, or what do your people think of that?
I can tell you, there's a whole lot of discussion on that right now. In fact, there's a law that may or may not go into effect. We'll find out with this new administration coming in by the Department of Labor, called the Fiduciary Rule, And if it is passed in April, it would be phased in over the course of the year. And it basically seeks to redefine who's considered a fiduciary under what's called the Employee Retirement Income and Security Act, or ERISA, of 1974. And it essentially elevates the level of the role of all financial professionals who provide retirement planning advice, for instance, to the level of fiduciary. So those professionals would be required to disclose any conflicts of interest that they have, and they must prove the suitability of their recommendations. And that's one of the areas that is making it a bit challenging to implement, because certainly determining whether an investment is suitable for a particular investor is a bit of a gray area. So there are probably some parts of that law that will pass, and I'd just like to reiterate what David was saying earlier about checking with the securities and the Maine Securities Division to see if somebody is registered. You can also check with the Securities and Exchange Commission at SEC.gov to find out if a particular advisor is registered with that division, as any firm with assets in excess of $100 million must register with the SEC as well. And there's also an organization, FINRA, FINRA.org, where you can do what's called broker check. And you can really look into the background of those individuals, those investment professionals, to see if there have been any past fines or past bad behavior that you want to know about. Each of them is required to file with those organizations, and there's a lot of information about them on those two sites.
John, thank you so much for your call. We have so many emails here. An email from Cheryl. One thing I've started this year is the 52-week savings challenge. Basically, you put in a set amount each week, starting with $52 the first week, $51 the second week, $50 the third week, and so on. By week 52, you are putting in $1. By the end of the calendar year, you will have saved $1,378. A little bit saved up each week really does add up.
It's incrementalism. I was fortunate. I am fortunate to be the son of two Depression era mom and dad, you know, and dad's 92, mom's 89, and that's how they did it. You know, they saved gradually. If they couldn't afford it, they saved up. And, you know, gradually, you know, putting money into the bank, going to see a broker dealer or whatever. I mean, that's been financial success. You know, they've been married since their early 30s. They're now in their, you know, towards the end of their careers. And that's the success. It's what Jennifer and Allison said. It's, you know, having money automatically set aside from your paycheck. I couldn't have said that better myself. And that's the key. You know, whether it's your 401k at work, whether it's visiting a very good registered dealer, you know, in securities, that's the key to success, because you always, if you want to get ahead, you have to invest ahead of inflation.
Exactly. Yeah, and there are major, major benefits to certainly plopping what you can into your 401k, at least as much as what your employer match is going to be, because those are free dollars. You don't want to give that money away. If your employer is going to match up to 5% of your salary, then you need to try to put that money in there, because that money it's given to you, and that's the minimum amount you should put in. And then you also have the advantage, because you put that money in pre-tax, of paying lower taxes, because it lowers your income for tax purposes. So There's a big win-win to putting that money away regularly and really focusing on doing the match if you can do it with your employer plan.
Yeah, and this time of year, a lot of people get raises or cost of living increases. It's a great time to say, okay, I'm at, let's say, 5% 401k contribution. Let's add an extra percent. You know, if I got a 3% cost of living raise, your paycheck is still going to go up. You're not even going to notice that money is not coming to you, because it never, you know, you never got it. So January, I've done it in my own life. January is a great time, or any time that you get a bonus or a raise or something. If you divert that to savings right away before it ever hits your bank account, you're literally not even going to notice.
It seems as though a lot of what you all do is psychology, not just a financial investing. We're going to turn to Michael and Herman. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. Sorry, I had to switch off. I am interested in finding out more about ETFs. I'm not clear on what they are. Are they riskier than regular mutual funds?
Good question.
Maybe a couple of pluses and a couple of minuses compared to mutual funds. Please.
Sure. So my understanding that ETFs are fairly new product and that they're available to people who maybe don't have the minimum investment for many mutual funds. Is that right?
That's right. They're an investment product, and you can buy them through pretty much any of the discount brokers, again, Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard. And the way they differ from mutual funds is that they trade on an exchange. So they're called exchange-traded funds. Like mutual funds, they're a basket of securities. So you can buy an ETF that seeks to replicate the S&P 500, for instance. You can also buy a mutual fund that seeks to replicate the S&P 500. The major difference between those two is that an exchange-traded fund, an ETF, constantly trades on the exchange at different prices over the course of the day, whereas the mutual fund, they settle up at the end of the day, and that's the price that you're going to pay for that mutual fund. So another advantage, an advantage of ETFs is they typically have much lower expenses, although they're fairly close if you're talking about an index fund, index mutual fund or index ETF. They're pretty close. But it's possible that an exchange-traded fund, because it trades all day long, and the reason it's doing that is because it is trading based on the underlying value of all the companies that are in there. So you have a basket of companies, for instance, like the S&P 500, and it's seeking to replicate the performance. And while it's trading over the course of the day, the price that it's trading at may or may not match the underlying value of what's in that basket of investments. It may trade at a premium, higher. It may trade at a discount, lower. And so you can get that information. If you're, say you set up a Schwab account and you decide, I want to go buy some ETFs, you can do that online. And they have research capabilities on their site, and all of the brokerage houses do, where you can look at what the range of that ETF, what is it trading at? So I would look at that, and then certainly you can research mutual funds there as well and compare the costs of those. Is there a transaction charge to buy that ETF, but the mutual fund has none? Mutual funds also, if you hold one, sometimes they have a 90-day feature where you can't sell it within 90 days, whereas ETFs, you can trade them daily. And I say you can't sell it, but what I mean is that without a transaction charge, a redemption fee. And what the funds try to do is they try to, you know, keep people from trading in and out of the fund because it costs them money to manage the fund. So they don't want you trading in and out of it. So I think that's a long-winded answer to your question, but those are the major differences between the two.
Good question, Michael. Thank you very much. From Jody on Facebook, where or who could I contact as far as an offer in compromise for back taxes?
For that, you do need a tax attorney. I don't exactly know where there's a listing. You know, I don't know who maintains a listing of tax attorneys in Maine. But that, I guess what I would do is either call an accounting firm that prepares taxes and find out if they prepare offers in compromise, because not all of them have experience doing that. And even if they don't, hopefully they could direct you to somebody who does have that kind of experience.
An email from MM. What would you tell someone who has not been able to save anything for retirement and has credit card debt? Is there any hope?
Well, I can't give the tax answer, so I'm going to defer later on to the tax answer. And I'm going to defer to the investment answer.
Oh, on this
but,
one,
yes. But I'll just jump in with the psychology part of it. It's never too late to start saving. I'm 57 years old. I obviously have started in a lot of different levels, but today is the day. I think we talked about that, you say, in the green room. This is all about the new year, doing things right. Credit card debt, I think Warren Buffett once said to a group of students, who can find an 18% return on investment with no risk? That's what's in your parents' pocketbooks and their billfolds is 18% APR, annual percentage rate credit cards. What you need to do with your credit cards that are at 18%, 20% or whatever is to find a local main bank, a local main credit union that maybe has a 9.9% APR and transfer those balances there and you're saving money already.
I agree with that completely. To the extent that you can put some of it toward investment and some of it toward debt, I can tell you that we recommend that our clients pay off their debt. But we do need to look at the interest rate on that debt. And if it's a high interest rate, then you want to try to get a lower interest rate and save yourself some of that interest that you're paying out. And again, yes, if an investment is performing better than the rate on the interest, then that's something else to look at. But I would focus on paying off that debt first. And certainly if you want to start investing, then allocate a portion of what you can toward the highest portion toward the debt and then another portion towards a regular kind of systematic savings plan.
Yeah. And the only other thing I'd add is I'll try to address the underlying root cause of why there's credit card debt. I mean, if the reason is because your house is too expensive and you just can't maintain your lifestyle, address that. I mean, maybe your expenses are not excessive, but you're just not making enough money. You know, as long as you can figure out why there was credit card debt and address that, then yeah, pay off the debt and hopefully start putting something away for retirement, particularly if there was an employer match on the table, like we talked about before.
The big issue for a lot of us is the FICO score, the credit score. And the utilization rate on your credit card should never go higher than 1/3. When it goes above that, it drops down to your credit score, your FICO score, your borrowing costs are higher, your insurance costs are higher, and everything.
When you say 1/3, what you mean is if you have a $1,000 limit, credit limit on your card, do not go over
$333. And if you can, and I always preach, pay your balance in full every month.
We have to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Freeport Pediatrics. Same-day appointments and block scheduling. All your children can be seen in one visit. 869-4022.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next topic up for debate is policing racially biased.
Whites use drugs more than blacks, yet the arrest rate for blacks is higher.
So if the crack penalties were anti-black, then meth penalties are anti-white.
You can join us for this program coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Journalist Alan Burdick has spent a long time thinking about time, pondering questions like, what's the meaning of now?
Yeah, you know, I spent like 10 years peering into that well and came out of it and felt like I had a long white beard.
More from his book, Why Time Flies. Also, coverage of the new administration as President Trump gets to work on his agenda. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answering your personal finance questions. With me today, David Leach with the State Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection. Allison Bishop is a financial coach, and Jennifer Wilson is with Dion Wealth Advisors. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Ray asks, are there investment advisors that simply sell advice and not investment products? How do you know if an advisor is acting in your best interest and not their best interest? Boy, talk about the $10,000 question. There are fee-only advisors, aren't there?
There are fee-only advisors, and fee-only advisors typically charge based on the assets that they manage, but they also charge on an hourly basis. So that's something that you could look at in their materials. And again, if you went to SEC.gov and search for the advisor, they have to put a copy of their what's called a Form ADV-2. And it's essentially an online brochure that talks about what fees people pay for their services. And it would disclose there whether they work on an hourly consultative basis or not.
We'll go to Jamal, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jamal. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. My question is regarding credit repair agencies like creditrepair.com, Credit Karma. How legit are those websites? And if you have a credit card debt, should you talk to the bank or should you try to settle with like a debt collector agency?
I'll start with you mentioned creditkarma.com. That is a data broker. And I want you to know you can get, and I'm not pushing creditkarma.com, by the way, but I am a user. And Will Lund, the superintendent of Consumer Credit Protection, said, I want you to be the guinea pig. And would you sign up for it? I said, yes. So I put in all my information, and I can daily look at my credit scores. And a credit score is something that runs from 300 to 850. The higher, the better. Just the opposite of a golf score. And so that, as far as I'm concerned, I'm in it as the office guinea pig. It's okay. It's a free way of getting your credit score. Your other question was these debt counselors or debt settlement companies. You know, you need to call our office, 1-800-332-8529. We actually call them debt management service providers. There are many people that are involved in this legally. They could be Maine attorneys. They could be companies that are registered or licensed by us as debt management service providers. Where do you turn to first? I would say, you know, a financial professional, if you have a mentor in your family. But usually if you're in a lot of trouble, a professional, and I think the person that emailed in or Facebooked in, like a nonprofit that's licensed with the state, is not a bad place to go, because they are going to approach it on a fiduciary matter. They're going to do it in your, as they were, Jennifer and Allison are saying, on your own best interest. So a licensed professional, if you need serious help, is a good way to go.
Jamal, thanks for your question. We have a similar email from Linda. My Discover card statement now provides a credit score each month. I'm wondering why mine fluctuates by as much as 12 to 15 points. I consistently use a very small percentage of my credit limit, and I pay in full each month on time. I'm not complaining. I'm just curious.
Well, it's kind of like the Coca-Cola formula and the KFC, the secret herbs and spices type of thing, where there's a certain percentage of your credit score is depending on what I just said earlier, your utilization rate on your credit cards. It's also on how you're paying your bills, early, on time, or late. So there's a lot of different factors. Also, the diversity of your credit report, you know, what's on there. And so there's a lot of different factors. The single two most important factors on increasing your credit score, which is good, are keeping your credit card balances either low or at zero and paying your bills on time. And if you have an old medical account that needs to be paid, a collection account, pay it off.
Okay, we're going to go to Freddie from Searsport. Hi, Freddie. Go ahead.
Hi. I heard on the radio something called Round App, where you have – oh, say 800 and no, I shouldn't even give an amount. They round up your total credit card purchases, and they whatever this is an app, and they invest that. They said it's a variation on the old penny jar routine of putting in your change every night into the penny jar, which I'm familiar with that. I was wondering if anyone could have heard of that and could speak on it for me. Thank you.
I just did. I was listening to a podcast, and they were interviewing a company that does this exact thing. I don't remember the name of the company, but it was an online bank, and they want you to use your debit card. And so one of their incentives was every time you use your debit card, they round it up to the next dollar, and that money automatically goes into a savings account. And I want to say this company gave you matched or gave you a bonus of 10% or something every week of what you were putting in. So I think that's a great, I mean, it's tiny amounts, but it definitely adds up over time. And so I think it's a good way. It seems like an easy, kind of a no-brainer way to get a little bit of savings.
Freddie, thanks for your call. We'll move to Matt, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, Matt. This is Matt. And hi, Dave. This is your friend from Hollowell. I wanted to call. I'm a veteran, and I just want to call to say that veterans are particularly vulnerable to financial fraud and whatnot. And I personally haven't been a victim, but I've had many peers that, while deployed or any number of different things that are specific to being active duty or out of the military, seem to make you quite vulnerable to some of these scam artists and whatnot. And there's so many other challenges that need to be addressed for military folks. It's nice to avoid the financial ones. And there are great resources at the Veterans Administration or online for veterans. And I'm sure Dave at his office could help you out too. But highlight the fact that veterans really take a beating sometimes by the financial guys out there. And hopefully they can find some good help if they get into trouble.
Matt, thanks for your call.
Matt, thank you for calling. I'll plug a book, The State of Maine's Gone Fishing Guide, Identifying and Avoiding Consumer Scams. It's a free guide not only to Maine veterans, but anyone living from Kittery to Fort Kent, from Lubeck to Jackman. Just ask for the Gone Fishing Guide. Steve Lemieux of our office, who is an incredibly intelligent young man, he helped write it with me, and we wrote it together. He designed it. He does a lot of the heavy lifting. 1-800-332-8529. Call, get the guide. Almost every scam you can think about, it's in there. Identify, avoid, and if you get scammed, some tips on how to maybe get your money back.
And how atrocious that vets who are deployed or active duty military are especially vulnerable to fraud. We're just going to go to Tom in East Dixfield, and we just lost him. Darn it. We'll go to Mark calling from Camden. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm calling about IRA accounts. I'm partially self-employed, but also work for a company. And I ended up making a little more money than I was expecting. So my accountant suggested I opened up a simple IRA account. And I went to my bank, and they opened up the wrong type of IRA account. And now I'm in a dispute with the bank over that. So I'm wondering two things. The IRA, the types of IRA accounts are very confusing, and who's supposed to know this? The difference. Am I supposed to go in there knowing everything about IRA accounts with the bank? They were saying my accountant, it was at fault, but he was the one that told me to go to the bank to get the account. And I'm also wondering, who do I go to for help with a dispute like that?
Okay.
With the bank?
There are different types of IRA accounts. So there's a traditional, which most people are qualify to open. There's the Roth IRA. Both of those, the limit is $5,500 a year to put in. And then for self-employed people, there's other ones, like you mentioned, Simple. There's SEP. You can even open a solo 401k now. What you could do, you can open an account at a different...
It sounds almost as if the bank misunderstood what you were trying to do and opened a simple, opened a regular contributory Roth for you rather than a simple plan for you as a self-employed person. And if that's the case, then I think that if you can go back to the bank and say, it sounds like you've already talked to them, and I'm not sure why they're disputing, but if you had asked them to open a simple plan for you versus an IRA, then they need to reverse what they've done and fix that.
As a regulator in the room, I would start with the Maine Bureau of Financial Institutions, that's Bank and Credit Union and Regulation of the State of Maine, call 1-800-965-5235. If it's a national bank with a federal charter, our good friends at the CFPB, mm-hmm. the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, 1-855-411-2372 would be a good – we won't ask the name of the financial institution on the air, but either of them. You could start with our local people at the Bureau of Financial Institutions.
Okay. Good luck to you, Mark. We have a Facebook post that reads – it's from Phil – my wife and I have a savings plan to get a 20% down payment on a home within the next 2 years. I'm concerned about how much our savings will erode over that time due to inflation. From what I can tell, CDs and savings accounts don't track well against inflation. Does it make more sense to bite the bullet early and pay for mortgage insurance, or is there a better way to invest short term that can keep pace with or beat out inflation? A lot going on there, and something Phil doesn't mention in his post but probably ought to is interest rates, right?
That's true. Interest rates going up, inflation going up, and certainly it does eat at your the value of your cash. If you're talking within the next 5 years, though, you really don't want to go out on a limb as far as risk is concerned in your portfolio. And we're not looking at a huge inflation rate here. We're probably at around the 2% level, which is
2 to 3,
about where the Fed wants us to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my preference, at least for short term, would be to maintain a very low risk cash and liquid securities rather than reaching out for higher yield, which always brings higher risk.
And the PMI that they alluded to is the private mortgage insurance, which is very expensive but necessary, and it does get people into homes.
And so what he's saying is that if he can save 20% for the down payment on his home, he's not going to have to pay private mortgage
insurance. There's a good chance of that.
And that's sort of what our parents' generation mm-hmm. did, but many people don't go that way anymore. And I think he's asking which is better financially for my wife and myself.
Well, PMI is expensive, so if you can avoid it and get that 20%, then by all means do that. But the other issue is that if, say, you're at, I don't know, 15 to 18%, you're almost there and it's want to get that house, you can certainly do it when you get to a level of equity in the house. You take the PMI off of the mortgage. So, you know, if you found the house of your dreams and you've only got 15%, then I'm not sure I would be inclined to let that house of your dreams slip away only because of that one issue. You'll be paying a little bit more for a little while, but again, once you're up to 20% equity on the – or is that right, Allison?
Yeah.
20%
no, that's
equity
right.
on the home.
Yeah, and then the other thing to consider – I was going to say that, and the other thing is interest rates are – mortgage rates are rising. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think within 2 years, you know, whether they buy a house now or in a year and 2 years, it's not going to be, I don't think, that huge of a difference. But I would start looking now. I mean, if they're planning to have 20% within 2 years, they're probably well on their way. And I don't know. I would start looking now. And if
you
they
could
find,
even get approved by the bank now, you know, get an approval on mortgage.
We have to say goodbye, but I promise David he would say something about the new hot new publication in his hand
Our On the Money Guide. It's a young person's guide to personal finance. It's free. Budgeting, insurance, car buying, everything's in there. Call 1-800-332-8529. It's yours.
And you'll post that on our Facebook page as well.
You certainly will.
Thank you all of you. Allison Bishop, an accountant and financial coach based in Portland. Jennifer Wilson, co-founder, president, and chief investment officer of DN Wealth Advisors in Bangor. David Lynch, principal. David Leach, why am I calling you the wrong day all day? Principal Consumer Credit Examiner with the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection. Nikki Shields ran the board today. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.